I carefully filed the letter in the bin. Oliver Roberts? And then it came to me. Smelly Roberts, Leeds Grammar School, 1948. A boy ostracised by his fellows. Firstly on the grounds of his overwhelming halitosis, and secondly, his habit of whipping you in the shower with a wet towel. Even then we realised he was a sadomasochist. The masochistic side of his nature was obvious. He loved a cold shower, but always took a hot one. And so, Oliver Roberts, wherever you are, do your worst. Every word of this is true, with the exception of a few adverbs. Dear listener, trust me. Listen on, and you be the judge. For Graham Chapman's memorial, they couldn't find a church big enough, so they hired the great hall at Bart's Hospital, where Graham had studied, and it was an amazing day. I was the MC, as requested by Graham one afternoon in the hospital. John Cleese was rather miffed that it wasn't in church, because he said he'd always wanted to say fuck in church. But he did a hilarious address about Graham, which was full of abuse, but was wonderful, and got big laughs. He did say fuck quite a lot, and then went off. And I said, thank you, John, that was fucking marvellous, and introduced Michael Palin. Michael came on and said, being the third one to say fuck today hasn't got much going for it, not much of a cachet. At the end, Neil Innes, wearing his duck hat, sang How Sweet to Be an Idiot, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Eric Idle then bounced on and got the whole audience to sing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, shouting all the while, I can't fucking hear you. What a day that was. Another day to remember was at the Theatre Royal Stratford East. Peter Cook had been in full cry in the bar, and on stage he began to harangue the audience about Spurs Football Club. John Junkin and I were sitting behind him on the stage, and the great Cook was whipping the audience up into a frenzy. They were actually laughing and booing at the same time. And Junkin turned to me and said, let's strip. We duly did, behind Peter to much applause. Emboldened by this applause, Peter reached new heights, and we had to keep stripping to the inevitable conclusion. Like everyone who knew him, I have great memories of Peter, but not all of them are happy ones. I worked on the ill-fated Joan Rivers show at the BBC. Joan had announced at a late stage that she wanted a Brit sidekick, rather on the model of Johnny Carson, who had Ed McMahon as his cohort. This has been much copied since. We have Jonathan Ross on the radio with Andy sitting next to him, Terry Wogan with his producer, Paulie Walters, Mark Namar and Mark Steele. It gives you a partner to bounce ideas off. So now Joan had asked for Peter Cook. At the time, this was very good news for Peter and his agent, David Wilkinson. Peter was signed up for, I'm sure, a lot of money. The trouble was that in practice, Peter just did 2 or 3 minutes at the top of the show before being relegated to the end of the settee. Now, a man of his calibre doesn't get going in 2 or 3 minutes, so this was a painful experience for him each and every recording. The night Bernard Manning appeared was one to be remembered. Joan started by interviewing Russell Grant, the astrologer, who had announced his refusal to appear on the same screen as Bernard Manning, so Russell was just going to do his interview and leave the building. My old friends Dick Vosborough, Neil Shand and a gang of us were upstairs in our writing room, which had been converted into the guest hospitality room, and a whole army of friends of Joan Rivers, Blue Rinses and whatever from Los Angeles came in to drink and chat. Erupting into the room came Bernard Manning in shirt and braces, who greeted us. Hello, Dick. Hello, Barry. Hello, Neil. On the screen, Russell Grant was on with Joan Rivers. What's that poof doing on television with professionals out of work? Blurted Bernard Manning. Oh, my God, said a woman behind him. And I thought, the evening's getting off to a roaring start. Then Bernard went downstairs to get ready, and soon he came on the screen. Joan had obviously never heard of him. She must have thought he was a sort of English Don Rickles, a provocative comedian, which is a not inaccurate definition of Bernard, but not the whole story.